I think you've probably had beers, Senator, and so.
So you're saying there's never been a case where you drank so much that you didn't remember what happened the night before or part of what happened?
That's, you're asking about, yeah, blackout. I don't know. Have you?
Could you answer the question, Judge? That's not happened. Is that your answer?
Yeah, and I'm curious if you have.
I have no drinking problem, Judge.
Yeah, nor do I.
Okay, thank you.
Hello, fellow law nerds. Welcome to yet another special confirmation hearing episode of Boom Lawyered, a Rewired.News podcast hosted by the legal journalism team that's in Cambridge, Massachusetts right now.
Woo!
Woo! I'm Imani Gandhi.
And I'm Jess Piclo. Rewired.News is the leading nonprofit journalism outlet devoted to reporting on reproductive and sexual health, rights, and justice, and the Team Legal podcast is part of that mission.
As a nonprofit, Rewired.News relies on your donations to fund Boom Lawyered and all of our evidence-based journalism. If you like our show and you want to hear more of it, please donate online.
You can support us at rewire.news/donation.
That's rewire.news/donation.
So let's give a big welcome and thanks to our new subscribers, because holy shit, oh Imani.
I'm dreaming of the day when I don't have to say welcome to another confirmation episode of Boom Lawyered. I just want to say something else, because frankly, I'm sick of Brett Kavanaugh.
Brent.
Brad.
Brad. Troy.
Troy. John. Jacob. Jingleheimer Schmidt. Like, I'm sick of the man. I'm sick of his face.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sick of him yelling at me. Like, what was the deal with him yelling at everyone today?
Okay, so yeah, let's talk about this, because a lot happened today. Today was the day that Republicans had scheduled a testimony to hear and air the allegations against Brett Kavanaugh brought by Dr. Blasey Ford.
Yes.
And can we just have a moment of how phenomenal a witness Dr. Ford was?
She was extraordinary. I mean, I've watched a lot of confirmation hearings. I've watched just a lot of hearings in general, whether they're court hearings, mm-hmm. Senate hearings. And she held herself together so well. Not only that, she was very sincere and she was very down to earth and mm-hmm. she was very, very believable. And she was hella smart when it came to the psychology of her lapsed memories, of her PTSD. I mean, there was, in terms of having a witness who can explain exactly what's going on with them in terms of their anxiety mm-hmm. and the trauma that they suffered as a result of sexual assault, you couldn't really find a better witness than Dr. Blasey Ford.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And so let's give some context for the listeners as to the format and what was happening here. So Republicans had called this hearing, and because it was a bunch of old white men who would be questioning Dr. Ford, they mm-hmm. brought in a special prosecutor. They brought in a woman who was with experience prosecuting sex crimes to cross-examine and effectively prosecute Dr. Ford.
Right. And they kept saying that, you know, oh, yeah, it's not a criminal trial. It's not, no one's on trial. But really, she was on trial. And the woman's name, the prosecutor's name is Rachel Mitchell.
Mm-hmm.
She's a prosecutor, I believe, from Maricopa County mm-hmm. in Arizona, which, if that sounds familiar to you, that's where Sheriff Joe Arpaio that's where his reign of terror was for years and years and years. And, you know, she prosecuted some of the cases that I assume that he would have been involved in.
Mm-hmm.
I thought she was very good for the job that she was brought to do. I think that she struck a nice balance between being aggressive and questioning, but not being an asshole. And I don't think that Republicans on the Senate would have been able to walk that fine line. But nevertheless, it was apparent that Rachel was trying to trip Dr. Blasey Ford up in a number of respects.
Mm-hmm.
First, with respect to the flying, there was a very odd line of questioning about her fear of flying. Can you talk a little bit about that, Jess?
Yeah, so this dynamic is really interesting here. You know, Dr. Ford had brought allegations and there was a big tussle about whether or not Republicans were going to hear them and when a hearing was happening and all of this stuff. And in a litigation context, prosecutors or attorneys will question witnesses to try and draw out inconsistencies in their testimony or to make them less believable. That's what happens in an adversarial process. I think it's probably important to note for our listeners that these aren't supposed to be adversarial proceedings.
Not at all. Not at all. These are supposed to be fact-finding proceedings where you're trying to get at the truth and trying to understand the character of this person that mm-hmm. we're probably going to elevate to the Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not what went on. We heard a lot of testimony about whether or not Dr. Blasey Ford was afraid of flying. And if she was afraid of flying, then how did she make it here when she was able to go on her vacations to Polynesia? And there were a couple of other far-flung places that they mentioned. But being afraid of flying doesn't mean you don't fly when you need to, right? If you need to get somewhere for vacation, you suck it up, you take some meds, and you go. If you need to fly across the country to testify about how someone assaulted mm-hmm. you 36 years ago, and that person is about to be elevated to the Supreme Court, you maybe pop a Xanax, you drink a glass of wine, and you fucking go. You know what I mean? So the whole line of questioning about whether she was afraid of flying and why it was she was there. And you know,
and if she was a Democratic operative who was paying for her polygraphs and if her lawyers were working for fees or not.
Right. And with every response, she would say, I thought it was my civic duty to come and testify. You know, it was important for me to be here. I think at one point she actually said she hoped that they would come to her, mm-hmm. but she realized that that wasn't reasonable. And that was kind of a humanizing moment because, yeah, I'm sure we can all imagine hoping not to have to fly across the country to be grilled in front of the entire country on TV about probably one of the most traumatic experiences in her life. So they tried to get her. They tried to trip her up there. They weren't able to trip her up on that. What are some other things that you recall they tried to trip her up on?
You know, whether or not she was a political operative, right. To the extent that she is responsible for leaking her story to the press, this whole idea that accusers come forward to seek notoriety and fame. I will say one of the things that that really stood out to me in Dr. Ford's testimony was not just the substance, but the manner in which she consistently tried to accommodate mm-hmm. the senators. You could tell this was an uncomfortable process for her. And so from the very get-go, she offered to lean forward into her mic, you know, to answer questions beyond the scope. And then you contrast that with Brett Kavanaugh, walks in basically shouting at the entire gallery.
It was bizarre to me. He was intermittently shouting and crying. Mm-hmm. I can't tell. I mean, there's some directors on Twitter who said, you know, when I see people who are crying but there's no actual tears on their face, I believe the director of Doctor Strange said he calls that bad acting. Mm-hmm. He was constantly sniffling and crying at weird times, like crying when he was mentioning this laundry list of women who had texted him to wish him good luck and well wishes. I think it was what was interesting was the contrast in demeanor between Dr. Blasey Ford and Judge Kavanaugh. One would expect Dr. Blasey Ford to be the more emotional one because she's talking about trauma. Mm-hmm. And in addition to the trauma she suffered then and is suffering now, she's had to uproot her entire family. She talked about how they've had to move several times, about how they've not been able to be together the whole time. She talked about the extensive security detail that she's had to hire. I mean, these are all traumatic things. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, Kavanaugh gets up there and is basically talking about how his life has been destroyed and this is hell for his family. And sure, I will grant that it has probably been terrible for him and terrible for his family. But the way that he was talking about it, it seemed almost as if he expected Dr. Blasey Ford to apologize to him for putting his family through all of this, as opposed to saying, yeah, you know, it's been hard for my family. It's been hard for her family, I'm sure, but we want to get to the bottom of this. Mm-hmm. There was no sense from Kavanaugh that he wanted to get to the truth of the matter, but that he wanted to air grievances at being forced to deal with this affront to his humanity and affront to his family and how his entire career has now been ruined by these I mean, he literally said that the proceedings were a joke. He said that they were a farce.
It was a Clinton conspiracy, Imani.
He mentioned the Clintons at some point. He said it was the revenge of the Clintons. I don't really know how that, I mean.
He's still got some Star Report hangover happening,
He does. And it didn't play well, I thought. I don't think it made him look good. I don't think his wife sat there looking very annoyed the entire time. I don't know. How did you think it played?
Yeah, I mean, so again, we've got a study of contrast. We have Dr. Blasey Ford, who sits through 3 hours effectively of cross-examination from Rachel Mitchell, the attorney brought in to question her. And then we have Judge Kavanaugh, who comes in, yells at the entire panel, calls it a farce, calls it a political hit job and a function of the Clinton Soros machine.
Yep.
And then the Republicans basically send Mitchell off after a couple questions because hey, it doesn't look so good when their guy is actually under legitimate cross-examination. And so then they start fluffing him,
yeah,
effectively.
And that's exactly what they did. I mean, Mitchell started to ask some questions of him that were pointed and just kind of got shoved to the side so that, you know, Chuck Grassley and who else, you know, all of these other Republican senators could essentially say, you know, this is an outrage that you're forced to go through this, and I'm sure that you're innocent, and I'm sure that you'll be confirmed, and just stick through it, champ, you'll be okay. It was a really kind of disgusting, just the way they circled around him to try and protect him from the truth, from what we should be getting to, which is the truth of the matter, mm-hmm. what actually happened. And frankly, it did not seem to me that Kavanaugh was at all interested in getting at the truth, although he said otherwise multiple times, right? So he was like, from day one, I wanted a hearing. I didn't even want to wait 10 days. And he was literally yelling.
Yeah, like talking, spitting, yelling.
He was talking over Feinstein. He asked Klobuchar whether she was an alcoholic, which was, I thought, a bizarre and strange moment. And it just didn't seem like he was very sincere. It seemed like an entitled guy who had gotten everything that he had always wanted in his life was finally being forced to account for his actions. Mm-hmm. Whether they took place or not is what the hearing was supposed to be getting at. But really, it was just a sort of a showcase for Brett Kavanaugh's outrage. His white dude outrage at being forced to answer these questions. How dare you ask me to account for these issues?
So what do you take about this position that Kavanaugh took during the hearing that, you know, gosh, golly gee, everybody's got it wrong, and I'm just here to do whatever the committee needs, and if that's an FBI investigation, well, bring it. It's an FBI investigation. What do you make of that?
It's horseshit. Because, I mean, to be honest, I mean, he kept saying, I'll do whatever the committee wants, whatever the committee wants, and a couple of Democratic committee members said, you have the power to go to President Trump or to tell Don McGahn, who is President Trump's lawyer, we need to stop these proceedings so we can open the FBI investigation and we can get to the bottom of this. Mm-hmm. And when asked if he would be willing to do that, he demurred. Every mm-hmm. time he changed the subject, he'd say, no, I'm innocent. I want to do whatever you want to do. And they're saying, well, we're telling you we don't have the power to tell the president to stop this because they're in the minority. You have the power. You are the nominee. Well, I'll just do whatever the committee wants to. It was just this circular thing where he was able to get out of answering the questions because he kept refusing to answer them. He was just filibustering.
Yeah, he was filibustering the question. And so I want to talk real quick about the Democratic strategy here on some of the line of questioning. I thought it was very effective for them to push Kavanaugh on his allegations about high school drinking. And look,
yeah,
I'm not here to say that if you were drinking too much in high school that, like, you're a terrible person. I drank a fair amount in high school.
I drank a fair amount in high school. I'm sure a lot of people did. But it wasn't about whether he drank in high school. It wasn't even about how much he drank in high school. It's about his truthfulness about
exactly.
his drinking in high school. And frankly, a lot of the stuff that he said today just didn't ring true. It doesn't ring true that there has never been a time if you drank as much beer as he said today he did. I mean, he mentioned beer a lot. I drink beer. You like beer? Who likes beer? Everybody likes beer. Despite his Fox News interview the other day where he presented himself as a teetotaling virgin. But today he was just, I mean, I half expected him to pull out a six pack and start throwing cans of beer in the audience. I mean, it was just like he couldn't stop talking about all the beer. But then when he was asked whether or not he ever drank too much to the point where he forgot what had happened or he mm-hmm. didn't remember what happened. Oh, well, no. I always remember what happens when I drink, which is nonsense.
That's
anyone
just
who
bizarre.
Was anyone who has drank as anyone who's played drinking games, a drunk and played drinking games
yeah.
understands that there's going to be a point where you probably did some shit you don't remember.
Right.
And you should just say that. He could have just said that. He could have said, "Yes, I drank a lot. I was in prep school. It was the 80s. We drank a lot, but I still never assaulted someone." That is something that he could have went with. But instead, he went with, "Oh, you know, we had a couple beers here and there. Yeah, I mean, it was, you drank a little bit, but of course, I mean, I never got blackout drunk. I never, you know, had any memory lapses." And that's just not something that anyone who has ever drank in college or high school would believe.
Exactly. And so there's one other point that I just got to get out there because it's a burr in my chaps. We have been talking about Republicans and they're pounding the table on this idea of due process, due process, due process, and have noted that there aren't actually any constitutional rights at stake here for
right.
Brett Kavanaugh. He doesn't have a constitutional right to a promotion to the Supreme Court. But what struck me is that even Republicans who suddenly got this big love for process and fair process and equal process gave Kavanaugh special treatment.
Yep.
Dr. Ford sat there through questioning from a effectively hostile prosecutor and then the Democratic senators, and they released Mitchell. Like, she, Dr. Ford and Kavanaugh didn't even have the same fundamental process in this hearing that was supposed to be about fundamental process. And I just want that point there out for the listeners because it's driving me bananas.
That's absolutely right. I mean, Kavanaugh was essentially allowed to sit there and yell and cry and be, you know, tearfully emotive, what looked to me very insincere, but we'll see how it plays in the media. While Dr. Ford sat there stoically answering questions, very deep personal questions, her opening statement was, I just think, very matter of fact. Mm-hmm. It wasn't overly emotional. It was just, this is what happened. Kavanaugh's opening statement was just shouty, almost drunken, crying anger. And it was very strange. It was a sort of, I think he showed anyone who was watching the sort of aggressive, bullying nature that he's been accused of having when he's drunk.
It struck me just how much he sounds like President Trump.
Yes.
At this point, I think he had done a fairly decent job creating some of that distance in terms of judicial temperament. But today, there was no daylight between his statements and President Trump's statements earlier defending Kavanaugh. And I think that that's a really, it's just a really important point. So now we have the what's next,
what's
right?
Next, yeah.
The Senate Judiciary is still scheduled to vote on his nomination. They have the votes to get him out of committee. Everything with the story has been bananas, so it's entirely possible by the time we have this edited and up that Republicans have decided to pull some new shit. Who knows?
Yeah, that's the thing with the Republicans. They are really pulling new shit whenever they can. But so if he gets out of committee, then what happens?
If he gets out of committee, and so far they've said that they want the vote to happen as soon as possible, as likely as Friday, and then schedule a final vote as soon as Tuesday. The Supreme Court term starts Monday, October 1st. So they are really trying to get him voted in and on the bench as soon as possible and before midterms. That doesn't mean that all hope is lost. It's clear that one of the reasons that they are rushing, I think, is because McConnell and Grassley are worried about the whip. They are worried about whipping the votes. It's not clear to them entirely that they have all of that. So there is still some time. A lot can happen. We have these other allegations that haven't even been aired either. And so, you know, who knows?
Yeah. And just to leave with one thing, one point that I think is crucial is that I have been sort of following Fox News's coverage of this. And certainly after Dr. Ford's testimony, Fox News called it a disaster for Republicans. They thought she was extremely credible. They thought that the way that she talked about the allegations, I think, brought up a lot of emotion in other Republican women.
So we should talk about race real quick, though, because, right? Like,
yeah.
This is a white woman talking to
absolutely.
White women.
Absolutely. And I think that has a lot to do with it. I think a lot of her credibility and her believability among white people is going to be the fact that there was this nice, soft-spoken, very stoic, very pretty, very gentle white woman who was clearly visibly upset, who had gone through a trauma, and that is something that other white people can relate to. Mm-hmm. I do want to make a point that there is often talk about the weaponization of white women's tears, and I don't think that I've seen people talking about that on Twitter. I don't think that qualifies here because her tears were related to her trauma.
Yes.
And the fact that white women's tears are viewed as more important is not her fault because she's a white woman. That's just the way societal racism works. But I think in this instance, it's going to work in the favor of Democrats because people looked at her and they identified with her. Chris Wallace, who's a Fox News host, said that he talked to his daughters. His daughters talked to him about experiences that they had with sexual assault and talk to him about why it is that they never told him, why it is that they never reported. Mm-hmm. And so he actually spoke about that and said that he had been schooled by his children about why it is women don't report. This is a Fox News host we're talking about here. So if there's any other of that among Republican men, among Fox News people, then Republicans could be in real trouble.
They could. And so anyone who says they know what's happening next with any sort of certainty is a liar.
They are a liar. Because we don't know, they don't know.
Exactly. But you can rest assured that as soon as we know, we will tell you all.
Right. That is absolutely true. So we're going to wrap it up.
Yep.
That's going to be it for Team Legal from Cambridge, Massachusetts.
Woo!
Twitter. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm Angry Black Lady. You can follow Jess on Twitter at Hegemommy, H-E-G-E-M-O-M-M-Y. You can follow Rewire.news on Twitter at Rewire_news. And if you want to hop on into our Facebook group, it is popping off. We're posting exclusive photos from our trip in Boston. So just look up Boom Lawyered on Facebook. Answer the question.
Please do.
And if you've tried to get in and you haven't been let in, go and try again and just answer that question. That might be the reason. We're not trying to keep you out. We promise. But aside from that, you got anything else?
Just, you know, what a week.
Yeah. What a week. Take care of yourselves. You know what I mean? Have a glass of wine. Have a nice glass of sparkling water. You know, smoke them if you got them. Just do what you can to take care of yourselves. It's been a really rough week. It's been a really triggering week. And Team Legal hugs you if you would like to be hugged.
Yes. And even if it's an awkward side hug.
If it's an awkward, like, Christian
or like
side hug.
Big pat on the back.
Right.
We'll do
exactly.
That too.
You know, any consensual touching and of affection that we can provide to you.
Affirmative consent only.
We are doing that because we understand it's been hard for people.
Hang in there. It's going to be a bananas weekend. And we will keep you posted with stuff that we know. See y'all on the tube.
See you on the tube.
Boom Lawyered is created and hosted by Jessica Mason Piclo and Imani Gandhi. Our producer is Nora Hurley. This episode was produced by Mark Folletti, who is also our executive producer. And the Rewire.news editor-in-chief is Jody Jacobson.